ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, the fourth canto, chapter 18, Prithu Maharaj milks the earth planet this morning, text number 7. And the earth continues to explain to Maharaj Prithu what the problem is in the non-production of grains and so on. Apalita, anardita, cha bhavadbhihi loka palakai chori bhute atta loke aham yajna arte agrasam orshadihi. Apalitana ditta cha bhavadbhir lokapalakai chori bhute taloke ham yajnarte grasam oshadhi. Apalitana ditta cha bhavadbhir lokapalakai chori bhute taloke ham yajnarte grasam oshadhi. Apalitana ditta cha bhavadbhir lokapalakai chori bhute taloke ham yajnarte grasam oshadhi. Apalita, without being taken care of, Anadita, being neglected. Cha, also. Bhavadbihi, like your good self. Lokapalakaihi, by the governors or kings. Chori bhute, being beset by thieves. Artha, therefore. Loke, this world. Aham, I. Yarishna arte, for the purpose of performing sacrifices. Ograsam, have hidden. Oshadhi, all the herbs and grains. Translation. Remember, this is Earth speaking to Prithu. My dear king, not only are grains and herbs being used by non-devotees, but as far as I am concerned, I am not being properly maintained. Indeed, I am being neglected by kings who are not punishing these rascals who have turned into thieves by using grains for sense gratification. Consequently, I have hidden all these seeds which were meant for the performance of sacrifice. Srila Prabhupada's purport. That which happened during the time of Prithu Maharaj and his father, King Bena, is also happening at the present moment. A huge arrangement exists for the production of large-scale industrial and agricultural products. But all these products are meant for sense gratification. Therefore, despite such productive capacities, there is scarcity, because the world's population is full of thieves. This is the word in the text, chori, means a thief. There he says, the word chori bhute indicates that the population has turned to thievery. According to Vedic understanding, men are transformed into thieves when they plan economic development for sense gratification. It is also explained in Bhagavad Gita that if one eats food grains without offering them to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yajna, he is a thief and is liable to be punished. According to spiritual communism, all properties on the surface of the globe belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The population has a right to use goods only after offering them to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the process of accepting prasad. Unless one eats prasad, he's certainly a thief. It is the duty of governors and kings to punish such thieves and maintain the world nicely. If this is not done, grains will no longer be produced, and people will simply starve. Indeed, not only will people be obliged to eat less, but they will kill one another and eat each other's flesh. They are already killing animals for flesh. And when there will no longer be grains, vegetables, and fruits, they will kill their own sons and fathers and eat their flesh for sustenance. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschachade Sacharane Umangyanam Chimarandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chatsuru Militam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpa Tubhyascha Kripasindhu Devacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So, in the previous verse, the earth had said that because the things I produce, the grains and the herbs and so on, are being used by non-devotees for sense gratification, therefore I'm not producing. But now she goes a little further, because the word here is lokapala. Pala means one who protects, like Gopal, cow protectors. So loka, in this context, it means the people. Sometimes it means a place or a planet. Or sometimes it means all the people who live in that place. So here, those who are the protectors of the people, kings or governors and so on. But here it's actually in the text, Prabhupada doesn't leaves it out of the translation. Bhavadbir, she says, like you. Such as yourself. Your good self. Bhavadbir is very polite, but such as your good self. They're not doing their job. Because Prithu was emperor of the world. And that meant that there were kings subordinate to him. They were also kings, so they had autonomy. But as the emperor, he was able to interfere upon occasion when there was deviation from their duties and correct them. That's the job of empires, when they're well-run anyway. So, not just talking about him, but If the other kings are not doing their job, you're the emperor, ultimately it's your responsibility to see that they are punishing these rascals who have turned into thieves by using grains for sense gratification. Because the grains are yajnarta. Artha means purpose or goal. Artha. For the sake of, or for the purpose of, yajna, for sacrifice. That's what they're for, and they're taking them and instead neglecting sacrifice and just using them for sense gratification. So therefore, I'm withholding them. I'm not going to let them have the products of the earth because they'll do it in this way, and so that's the scarcity. So these people have to be corrected. So you know this from the perspective here, how Prabhupada points out how quite practical this conclusions are. Of course, here we have a certain explanation for why things go wrong. It is generally known to be the duty of the king or the government, especially to take care of the material welfare of the people. If the brahmanas are supposed to take care of their spiritual well-being, that's their specialty, then the kings, the kshatriyas, the team works together, the brahmin kshatriya team, and his specialty is to protect them from these things, like aggression from the outside, from thieves and so on from the inside. Then to see that everyone is working and everyone has enough to eat and so on. Plus the roads work and so on. That was all the responsibility of the kings. And that's still regarded, of course now, the sole business of the government is seen as simply economic development, since there are no brahmanas, and in fact there are no kings really. They're all thieves. They're all thieves. As we, you know, you read the newspapers, it's a big issue. Thievery. Not just in third world countries, but our big corporate executives are looting their companies. And they seem to be facilitated to do this by the government. In fact, there's a word that you see now for a certain kind of government. It's called a kleptocracy. You know, the word Greek for thief, klepto, as like we may be familiar with the word a kleptomaniac, right? Someone who's a compulsive thief is called a kleptomaniac. That's the medical, psychological nomenclature. So somebody's made up the word kleptocracy to talk of a government by thieves, because it's so common now, you need a word to describe it, where basically somebody gets in power and then they loot the country. And the whole country goes into total decline. People are hungry. Disease is rampant. The roads are muddy ditches. People are just fighting with each other all the time. And the government is piling up a fortune in Swiss bank accounts and so on. And when they finally have taken everything they can, they split and retire to the Riviera. This goes on in Africa and third world countries. But actually it goes on in this country too. It's just much more sophisticated. It's kleptocracy, the government of thieves. So Prabhupada says the same failure to produce is going on now. Now he says a huge arrangement exists for the production of large-scale industrial and agricultural products. But all these products are meant for sense gratification. Therefore, despite such productive capacities, there's a scarcity because the world's population is full of thieves. There actually is. I mean, if you look at the world statistics on hunger and so on, even though there's such a huge capacity for production, albeit artificial, still people are hungry. Even a huge number of people are hungry in America, where the number one health problem turns out to be obesity. So some people are devouring everything and the rest go hungry. When you have taken something that's set aside for somebody else, that's a thief. You take things that don't belong to you. And so people are thieving. And it will come to no good. We can see this already. The large-scale production. It means that Prabhupada has said that this industrial civilization, the economy, industrial economy is artificial. It's not sustainable. So after a while it will exhaust itself and then collapse, leaving, just like when a business leaves, you know, some factory gets in there, it makes things like crazy, finally it moves south or something else, it abandons or goes out of business, and what's left, as it turns out, you know, open mines, depleted soil, and a toxic waste everywhere that somebody else has to clean up. This is the story. That's not our problem. The fact that the rivers are full of PCBs, or that there's open pit mines full of acid we've stripped the land around us and polluted it. Now we're gone. Not our problem. So this is a model of what will happen to the whole system. Of course, now we're engaged. The Industrial Revolution, you should understand, was not something that just happened in the 19th century. It's an ongoing process. And things are going through now is just the latest stage of... People have talked about post-industrial civilization. It's not post-industrial, it's hyper-industrial. And then there's a very good anthropologist named Harris who's analyzed this quite clearly. So this is not just my own observations. First of all, the industrialization of agriculture didn't really happen on a large scale, or really didn't get consolidated, I should say, until after World War II. So this is a recent phenomenon. Of course, we had some things, tractors, McCormick reapers, and you know those kinds of things, to change the face of agriculture, but... Now what's happened is the further industrialization by the disappearance of the family farm and the replacement by agribusiness, so that the people who actually use the soil are no longer people who live there. The family is, that's a archaic, the family is a unit of production. So now the people who own the land, they sit up in these glass towers and St. Louis or someplace. They're just corporate guys. They just have computers and numbers. And if you visited a factory farm, if you visited a factory dairy, you can see what it does. Huge machines, gigantic. Fertilization, just to maximize production as much as possible. And of course then the next step, genetically engineered crops. So anyway, this is a further thing. Then the further advance of industrial civilization, this is being carried on by the computer. What the computer has done is turn what was, but there used to be a distinction between blue-collar factory work, where you worked as part of a cog in a big system. You're timed by the speed of the machine. You did just a little part of a task mechanically over and over and over again, and you were watched at every minute under supervision. This factory work. Now, what computers have done have changed white collar work, where you had some autonomy and you used your own intelligence, turned white collar work into factory work. Because now, instead of doing the kind of thing, like you sell airline tickets, for example, now it's a factory because there's a computer. Somebody calls you up, you're given a script to read. Somebody's watching you at all times. Some supervisor looks at every keystroke you make if they want. And you don't use your intelligence anymore. You can't answer questions. You have to follow the program. Not only things like airline clerks and insurance agents, but you can now see a lot of medicine is actually factory medicine. They will not need the doctors anymore. They'll just be programs. They type in your symptoms and everything else, and so the HMOs are turning medical doctors into factory workers, because everyone becomes gradually more and more a shudra. That's what we're having is hyper industrialization. Universities are now known as knowledge factories. Also, and of course, how are the kids going to be taught? That the goal is ultimately by machines. Everybody's at a computer terminal, and so on. So anyway, this is going on. So the Industrial Revolution is still an ongoing project, and the globalization is consolidating it anymore, more and more. like this. So just because factory jobs are being exported doesn't mean that everybody else. Oh, also, by the way, like a restaurant. What is a fast food restaurant? A chain. It's a factory. It's a food factory where you go in and everything is programmed. Everybody follows a script. Nobody actually cooks things there. You know, they just do the thing. So that's also a factory now. That's been industrialized. This is what's happening. People will become poorer. That will also happen. Some people become very rich. Everybody else becomes poorer. There are no labor unions anymore. What happened to those, huh? And then people who work at these big factories, whether they're department store factories like Walmart or Target or things like that, they're all in these service jobs now that are basically factory jobs, and they don't get paid, they don't have a labor union. And there's this thing called high productivity, that's the thing. High productivity means more output from fewer people. Right? And a lot of times it means the customer has to do the work. Anyway. With a computer, you know, you check in at the airline counter now, you do it. There's no person there, you just do it like that. Anyway, this is the way we're going. And it will not last. It's all artificial. I don't know what the timing is going to be, but the industrialization of food production is, to me, the scariest part of the thing, because then it means that ultimately when the whole system crashes, there'll be nothing to eat. There'll be nothing to eat. And I think Prabhupada foresees that clearly. The idea of what's really going on, it actually, the problem is a question of a spiritual disease. Otherwise, when the world was created, how to live was actually established from the very beginning. How we are supposed to maintain ourselves, our vritti, our means of maintenance, in such a way that we are, our necessities are satisfied, and we have surplus time for spiritual development. That's basically the system that's set up by Krishna. But now, when that system is abrogated by this kind of rape of the earth called industrial civilization, then this is gone wrong. So what is the system that Krishna sets up? It's called sacrifice. And it's based on understanding our relationship of our senses and of the goods of the earth, that they are all, everything is meant for sacrifice. And here again, in this text, Yajnarte, this is another reference, as in the previous text, to the statement in the Bhagavad Gita that this work has to be done for the sake of sacrifice. Yajna Arte. Yajna also is a name for Krishna or Vishnu. So, because all sacrifice is ultimately meant for Vishnu. And when sacrifice is done, then the right understanding is there. Sacrifice means that I understand that everything belongs ultimately to the Lord. Ishavasyam idam sarvam yatkin cha jagatyam jagat. Says that everything in this world, whether it's animate or inanimate, is controlled and owned by the Lord. And this understanding has to be there. Not just in theory, but if it belongs to God, then if I take it, if I expropriate it for myself as the center of enjoyment, I become a thief. Thief means you take things that belong to other people and you use them for yourself. The French radical Proudhon was famous for the statement, property is theft. But theft from whom? Who does all the property belong to? Well, the mundane communist theory is, well, the people. How do the people own it? How is it theirs? Clearly, when there's property owners and people don't have any property, you think, well, how did this inequitable distribution of wealth take place? In America, you know, I mean, we don't think we're a third world country, but 5% of the family owns 80% of the wealth. Those 5% are the creditors, and the other 95% are the debtors. Anyway, that's really the condition in America. How did 5% of the people end up with 80% of the wealth? Well, what's going on? But to whom does the property belong? Actually, it belongs to God. This is what Prabhupada talks about when he uses the term spiritual communism. Communism that in one sense I have no private property. On one level, there's no such thing as private property. But it doesn't belong to the people or to the government, which is supposed to be the dictatorship or the proletariat, you know, who was supposed to be holding it in trust for the people. They ended up another group of thieves, of course. People, because we have communism, but you're still thieves. But with Prabhupada, he wanted to have what he called Bhagavat communism. That was what he says, godly communism. And actually, one time he talked about having a symbol for it. Because, you know, the communist symbol, of course, this is in India where communism, during Prabhupada's times, had immense prestige. And, of course, there's still communist governments in India. And West Bengal is a communist government. Kerala is a communist government. And all during the Cold War, India was an ally of Russia, not the United States. So there was a great deal of communist influence and communist propaganda in India. So Prabhupada then would preach Bhagavat communism. And anyway, his symbol, the communist symbol is a hammer and a sickle, meaning two kinds of workers. The hammer meaning the industrial workers and the sickle meaning the agricultural workers. So Prabhupada said he wanted the Bhagavat communism to be a tilak with sickle. He said, not this hammer. He said, this hammer has hammered humanity to death. Anyway, I actually designed it once for Gita Nagari. I had a t-shirt made, you know, with his tilak and cross sickles and Ishavasham Midam Sarvam in Sanskrit below it. This means recognizing that everything belongs to God. And you have to acknowledge it concretely. If it actually belongs to God, I can't say everything belongs to God, therefore it's mine. Everything belongs to God, therefore it's God, and therefore I have to use it in God's service. This is acknowledged in sacrifice. You see, when I take possession of something, you know, I say, this is my book. What makes it my book? Well, right now I've got control over it, but what's actually the thing that makes it mine? It can go away from me. It can be separated from me. It can disappear. Somebody else can take it. It'll probably still go on after I'm dead. Maybe it was here before I was alive. Or when I say, I say this property is mine, this land is mine. Right, it belongs to me. Well, did it belong to you 500 years ago? The land was here 500 years ago. Where were you? And after you're gone, the Lamb will go on for thousands and thousands of years. For thousands and thousands of years is there before you. Thousands and thousands of years is there after you. And here you are and you say, mine? What are you saying, mine? You're blowing over it like smoke. What's this mine? It's all a mental concoction that anything belongs to me. I have temporarily the use of enjoyment of something, but also, I mean, I look at my body. Do I own it? No, I got a lease on it, maybe. But there's a landlord, and I'm just a tenant, and I will have to vacate. This whole thing that anything is mine is nonsense. It's utterly and totally wrong. And if I have something that's use of enjoyment of certain things, where did I get them from? Did I make them? Did I produce them out of my own opulence? No. I didn't make anything. Here I got this clever little body. Look at these clever little hands, these stickers and what Shakespeare calls them, stealers and pickers. These stealers and pickers, pickpocketing, stealing, pickers. I got these clever little hands that do so many things. Did I make them? Do I know how they work? No, all I know is somehow or other I'm gifted with these hands that do these little different things. You know, I got the eyes that say, whoa, good eye, you know. How did I do that? You know, it must be pretty wonderful. I didn't do it. Actually, where does it all come from? It comes from Krishna. It's all Krishna's energy. If I see things in their reality, I have to see that everything is connected very solidly with Krishna. I'm also Krishna's energy. I'm meaning the soul. And this body is Krishna's energy. Everything is Krishna's energy. We are all really part of the complete whole. And we are suffering in this world because we don't know that. There's been a disruption or a divorce, a alienation. That's what it is. We have alienated ourselves from reality, from God, from the complete whole. We've alienated ourselves from reality. And as a soul, I'm alienated. The body and the senses, my instruments, that I've alienated. The sense objects, that I've alienated. What is the intrinsic act of alienation? Sense gratification. That's the problem with it. It is the act of alienation and therefore the act of ignorance. It's the act that establishes and perpetuates ignorance. And the world of reality disappears and is replaced with something else, which is called Maya. How do we remove this Maya, the sacrifice? So here, in 4:24, the sacrifice is explained as that activity in which everything becomes one in Brahman or spiritual. Huh? Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir, Brahmagnau Brahmanahuttam Brahmaiva Tena Gantavyam Brahma Karma Samadina. Now this, the literal translation of this, which you get from the word for word, is that in the activities of sacrifice, the arpanam, what you're sacrificing, is Brahma, it's spirit. The hadi, the butter, is Brahman. The huttam, the offering, is Brahman. The agni, the fire into which it is offered, that is Brahman. the one who is doing the sacrifice, Brahmaivatena Gantavya, that person is, their destination is Brahman. Brahma Karmi Samadhanam, because, and one is absorbed in all the activities in which one is absorbed in samadhi, the karma, that's also Brahman. So this is describing the sacrifice as the act by which everything, all the different parts, all the different elements, all become Brahman. Prabhupada translates it like this: a person who's fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the consummation is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. Because here, Prabhupada's translation looks at sacrifice as more than just a certain kind of ritual act. Yajnarte. That one sacrifice, one should act only for the sake of sacrifice. But sacrifice turns out in the Bhagavad Gita that we are to act in such a way that everything we do becomes sacrifice. And that's why in the previous verse, Prabhupada has quoted Krishnarte Akila Cheshta. This is from Majjalila, that Cheshta means your endeavors. Akila means all your endeavors. Krishnarte, for the sake of Krishna. And this from the Chaitanya Charitamrita is actually another version of really what appears in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there are 64, Prabhupada calls them items of devotional service. In the beginning, there's a description of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And that Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti has 64 angas, beginning with taking shelter of a spiritual master, receiving initiation, serving with faith and confidence, and so on. Those are the beginning angas. There are 64 angas. One of those angas is tad arte akila cheshtitam. Tad here, that, for the sake of that. Tad means sometimes is the indicator of God. Tat paritvena nirmalam. So for the sake of that's why Chaitanya Charitamrita just says Krishna arte. Tat means, tat indicates Krishna. Om tat sat. Tat, that means, but that with a capital T, the big that, the original that. So tat arte. So this is one of the items. Devotional service means all one's endeavors for the sake of Krishna, so that one's whole life becomes a sacrifice. It's not just a certain ritual. Basically, what we see in the Bhagavad Gita is the battle of Kurukshetra becomes a sacrifice. It's all being done by the Lord. So Prabhupada says here, how activities in Krishna consciousness can lead one ultimately to the spiritual goal is described here. And he says here, the principle of Krishna consciousness is described. A conditioned soul entangled in material contamination is sure to act in the material atmosphere. Yet he has to get out of such an environment. So here we are in the material world. We have got our senses, we have got our hands, our pickers and stealers, or whatever. And the sense objects are there. We have the impetus to perform activities. That actually comes from the spirit, our spiritual nature. But we're entangled. What do we do? How do we get out? The process by which the conditioned soul can get out of the material atmosphere is Krishna consciousness. For example, and then he gives the homeopathic principle, that which causes the disease also can cure it if it's done in a different way. The way yogurt can cure diarrhea, which is caused by overindulgence in milk. The materially absorbed conditioned soul can be cured by Krishna consciousness. This process is generally known as yajna, or activities, sacrifices, simply meant for the satisfaction of Vishnu or Krishna. So this is the real meaning of sacrifice. Krishnarte Akila Cheshta. All endeavors performed for the sake of Krishna. The more the activities of the material world are performed in Krishna consciousness or for Vishnu only. That is, Vishnu is the enjoyer. That's what the sacrifice means. The more the atmosphere becomes spiritualized by complete absorption. Interesting phrase, huh? Spiritualized by complete absorption. Absorption into what? Absorption into Krishna. Yeah. The word Brahma, Brahman, means spiritual. The Lord is spiritual. And the rays of His transcendental body are called Brahma Jyoti, His spiritual effulgence. Everything that exists is situated in this, that Brahma Jyoti. But when the Jyoti is covered by illusion, Maya, or, remember the next word? Sense gratification. There it is. There's our buddy. It is called material. See, it's not material. Everything is actually Brahman. Originally it's Brahman. Brahman means connected with Krishna. What's not connected with Krishna? Everything's connected with Krishna. But when there's a sense gratification, it's disconnected and now it appears as Maya, as matter. So where matter comes from is actually a product of our ignorance and of our alienation, our activities of alienation. This material veil can be removed at once by Krishna consciousness. Thus, and now here's another translation of the verse, the offering for the sake of Krishna consciousness, the consuming agent of such an offering or contribution, the process of consumption, the contributor and the result are all combined together, Brahman or the absolute truth. You see how you've got another translation, more literal translation actually. This is embedded in the purport. The absolute truth covered by Maya is called matter. So Prabhupada again makes this point. Matter, dovetailed for the cause of the absolute truth, regains its spiritual quality. That means that the activities of sacrifice of Krishna consciousness is really the re-spiritualization of matter. Krishna consciousness is the process of converting the illusory consciousness into Brahman or the Supreme. When the mind is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, is said to be in samadhi, that's the last word in the verse, samadhina, or trance. Anything done in such transcendental consciousness is called yajna, or sacrifice for the absolute. In that condition of spiritual consciousness, and again the verse is translated, the contributor, the contribution, the consumption, the performer, or leader of the performance, and the result or ultimate gain, everything becomes one in the absolute, the supreme Brahman. That is the method of Krishna consciousness. Isn't that a great purport? That's what it's about. The whole material nightmare of history, and illusion and difficulty, all this is because of Maya, sense gratification, alienation. We're alienated from Krishna. So we have to understand this. That's the problem with sense gratification. It's the cause of death. We don't die, we're eternal. Why do we undergo the illusion of death? It is sense gratification. That's why devotees are supposed to recognize Veda Dukatmakan Kaman. They know that the soul of all sense gratification, Dukha Atma, the soul, the Atma of all sense gratification is dukkha, suffering. It's a poison pill. That's the problem. Problem with it. And the whole earth becomes disrupted. When again there's Krishna consciousness, not only are we restored to Krishna consciousness, but actually this disrupted, cut off world also becomes whole. It's also a complete whole, but the wholeness is now not manifest. Wholeness means everything is there that we need naturally. It's not there now. When it again reconnected with Krishna, its wholeness becomes becomes manifest in this. This is the prescription of Krishna consciousness. It is eminently practical. It is the only thing ultimately that will work for everybody. Like comments? Yeah, questions?
I had a question for a while now that I didn't understand about. I've heard it said in the Lord that, when you're in the Maya, the energy seems like impersonal, like it's just wild, like action and reaction, and then when somebody becomes a devotee, it's a personal relationship with God. But it seems like, from what we're hearing, it's all, is it the super. How's that? You hear that the super soul fulfills desires of someone who has material desires also, so it seems like the whole thing is personal.
Yeah, it is personal. You just don't see it, that's all. Because the personal is that when you want to turn away from Krishna, how can you possibly turn away from Krishna? You turn this way, Krishna's there too. You turn this way, he's there too. There's no turning away from Krishna. It's absolutely impossible to turn away from Krishna. Therefore, Krishna says, okay, I'm going to lower this screen over your consciousness and you won't see me. He does it. They forget him, as Prabhupada says someplace, by his grace. So even Maya is Krishna's energy, but it's that energy which conceals Krishna from you. Yeah, but ultimately it's all personal. You just are not, by Maya you don't see it. Krishna is the first of facts. You can't see anything without Krishna seeing it first. You can't hear anything without Krishna's hearing it first. It's actually Krishna's he's inside, he's outside. He's like space, you know, just is there, inescapable. Yeah, because it's the super soul that sees that he also reigns, that the karma comes. That's what he's doing. When Arjuna sees the universal form, that's one way. So when, you know, the arm of the universal form sweeps, you know, so many things are happening, but if it's composed of kshatriyas, that's they're being who is the controller of material nature? Mayajakshena Prakriti. This Prakriti is working under my superintendent. The idiot says, Kartaham iti manyate, I am the doer. But no, it's actually all being done by material nature. How does material nature do it? Under the superintendence of Krishna. So a devotee sees that. Other people, they don't see, they don't know what's going on. This is called the mode of ignorance. What's happening? I don't know what's going on here. Like Mr. Jones in the old Rolling Stones song, something's happening here, but you don't know what it is. That Rolling Stone, Bob Dylan song, to you, Mr. Jones. Right. Anything else? Yeah?
I've heard some of the games going on in these sites, the remark that I'm going on here, verse in Bhagavad Gita, the verse is quoted, the offering is from to substantiate a notion that actually there's one claim of the other grid in Maya, kind of like this kind of subjective state. It doesn't really exist. And I've heard some of you explain Brahmanism of your words as explaining different kinds of spirit.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what your take
is. The second group is correct, because I asked Prabhupada this question directly. I was with Prabhupada in a morning walk in New Vrindavan. We were walking through the forests, and myself was there, and Swarup Damodar, some other people were there from the Bhaktivedanta Institute. And somehow or other, Prabhupada started talking about how everything is actually spirit. And he pointed to the wood and the tree. He said, just like this wood is actually another form of fire. The tree absorbs the sunlight and grows wood, but it's actually fire, and if it's ignited again, the fire comes back out. So it's actually fire. Wood is fire in another form. So similarly, everything is actually spirit. So Prabhupada was talking like that, and I became quite confused. And so I asked Srila Prabhupada, I revealed my mind, I said, I'm trying very hard, because I was I'd just been a devotee a few years. I said, my big effort is to understand the difference between spirit and matter. I'm not my body, and the spirit's one thing and matter is something else. So it's very important that I'm trying to understand I'm not quoting myself exactly, but this is what I was asking, that I'm trying to understand the difference. But now I also have to understand that actually everything is spirit. So now this has got me confused. And Prabhupada just said to me, this is what he said. He said, we are not Mayavadis. There are different kinds of spirit. That's what he said. So it's actually there are different kinds of spirit. And in other words, there is a material world. It's not just all the spiritual world. There's a material energy and the spiritual energy, and we make that distinction. But ultimately, there are different kinds of spirit. The material energy is another kind of spiritual energy, because in this sense, the nature, the meaning of spirit is connected to Krishna. So there's nothing that's not, if something is not connected with Krishna, it doesn't exist. Everything's connected with Krishna. Therefore, it's spiritual. And that spiritual nature is revealed. We may be in the material world. If I'm a fully self-realized soul, the body I'm acting in, my sadhaka deha, Prabhupada described this as a spiritualized material body, and he called it a gold-plated box. Why not a solid gold box? Well, the solid gold box is the siddha deha. That's my spiritual body that remains in the spiritual world. But meanwhile, here, this is a gold-plated box. That means for all practical purposes, as good as solid gold. But still, not quite the same thing, because this body will grow old. It will drop away. I may have to get a tooth pulled, or these kind of things will happen. But whatever happens to this body, this spiritualized material body, it will not disturb my devotional service. There's no impediment. Whereas this body I can use for sense gratification. A spiritual body, logically impossible to use for sense gratification. As soon as you do, it becomes this material body, it's manifested this way. But so this body I can use for sense gratification. These hands, which are meant for tying the belt around Radharani, or now there's stealers and pickers. I'm doing things with these hands. There's a famous James Joyce, the writer, some some lady approached him, a fan, and she says, I want you, took his, grabbed his hand, she said, I want to kiss the hand that wrote Ulysses. And he said, no, he said, if you knew what this hand was doing, it's done you. So we've taken our senses and put them to very bad purposes. But when they're rectified, then they're as good as spiritual senses. They present no impediment whatsoever. The only thing is the dual use capacity that's there to turn away from Krishna. And the senses become so-called material. Atasi Krishna nama dignaba vedgraya minjaya. And these senses, they cannot contact with Krishna. However, when they are engaged in Krishna's service, then again they regain their original capacity. And Krishna can, his name, form, qualities, pastimes, they can be apprehended. That's what sacrifice does. The senses also become Brahman. Okay? Maybe we should stop. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.